them head to head. But I think it's really just been how evenly matched head to head, let's say the 15th team has been to the 7 to 15. Like the 15th team will beat the 7th team, and the 13th team will beat the 9th team a lot.
It's a muddy, murky, muddled mess.
They all just beat each other a lot.
Yeah.
And so they wind up with essentially the same record from Portland at 14 and 18 to even all the way down to, let's say, Phoenix in 13th at 11 and 20. You know, it's just different versions of the same team.
So
right
why
now.
Not the Warriors this year as a playoff team?
They're still,
given everything you just said.
Whitey, they're still only on pace to win 22 games. And right now Portland is 14 and 18. They're on pace to win 35 games.
Yeah, but you know, when you look at the Warriors and you say, oh, on pace to, well, on pace to includes how poorly they played earlier in the year. And right now they're playing much, much, much better.
They are playing much better. But
I know,
but
they'd have to go, what, 27 and 22 to get to 36?
Yeah, and I don't even see that, even if you're telling
me... That's a long putt.
Even if you're telling me Curry's going to play the last 20, or, you know, 25, something like that, I still think you're looking at... That's probably too much to overcome, because how much of that are you going to be able to continue to make up before he comes back, let's say, somewhere around early to mid-March?
Yeah. But you do have a lot of these teams that are just ahead of the Warriors between the 8th spot and the 15th spot, and they're not playing well. They're really struggling. You also have the fact that the East has been better than the West this year, so it's tough for these teams to gain traction. They play outside of conference. That those games are not the automatic wins they used to be. I will be interested to see how close the Warriors get to the 8th spot, and maybe this is as close as they'll get. 5.5. I'd love to see him creep a little closer. I'm not even sure as an organization that's really what they want this year, but I'll be very interested to see how close they can get.
I would wonder if they ended up, let's say, 3 back, but the record is still, they're 15 and 32 or something like that.
I understand all that. I don't disagree with it.
It's just
fun to dream a little
bit. And look, they're so far out of it, and they're still on a 22 win pace overall. And I know Curry's coming back, and maybe Clay comes back at some point. But they are so far out of it in terms of just being a good team that I just don't think they're going to give it much credence. I would be interested, let's say, if they got to within 3, you know, what do they do at that point? I mean, they wouldn't be in position to necessarily add anything as far as trying to make a run for it, because you know you're getting Curry and Klay Thompson potentially back at some point down the line. But I wonder if they would find themselves in a spot where they would subtract intentionally, if you will, attempt to make sure they're closer to the bottom.
I think they're already looking at trading Burks and maybe GR3 and Chris, Willie Cauley-Stein, and Spellman, some combination thereof. I think that's already part of their plan. So that's going to be really interesting, and they want to do that for future assets. So that might be one reason why, you know, Monty Poole reporting today that they're doing that. They might want to be letting people know, look, this is what our plan is, so don't get too attached to this idea of the Warriors maybe making a run at the 8th spot, because we're not really trying to do that this year.
Well, and again, I know 5.5 is 5.5, but it just doesn't seem realistic to me.
I know that. I don't disagree at all.
In any manner, to where you even have to acknowledge taking pieces away. Like, to me, you're more looking at taking pieces away in an attempt to free up spots for, let's say, a Damian Lee or a Kai Bowman. Like, you're not sending Alec Burks somewhere, let's say, for a second round pick in an attempt to not be as good. You're doing it in an attempt to
future assets,
create a spot for Damian Lee.
Pardon me. Yeah. And also to be as good as you can be next year.
Let's get to Roger in San Francisco. Roger, you're on Warriors this week on 95.7 The Game. Hey, Roger.
Oh, hey, guys. JD, Whitey, really appreciate you guys being on today. I just want to say I think the narrative is wrong. The Monty Poole, Steinmetz, Ray Ratto, JD, I got to throw you in there here, which is how terrible the Warriors are going to be this year. Because I got to say, from a fan's perspective, I mean, we believe was good. The three championships were great, but nothing I mean, right up there would be an eighth seed this year, some type of a run, and then knocking off one of those LA teams. I don't think from a fan's perspective that there's much that's going to top raining on Kawhi or LeBron's 2020 parade.
So you would want the Warriors to go all in to, let's say, win 37 games and be an eight seed?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, Wiseman's, you know, he looks great. I'm a Toppin guy, you know, and you could get Toppin a little bit later, maybe trade. If you make the playoffs, trade for Toppin. But, yeah, there's nothing in the draft that's like Zion or even R.J. Barrett. So it's like, what's the point? Like, the narrative has been tanking is a good idea. I just read a Monty Poole article that said, hey, don't get your hopes up, guys. What's best for the organization is to get the lottery pick. But I just don't see that. And, you know, these guys don't play, you know, for themselves. They play for the fans. And as a fan, there would be nothing sweeter. Honestly, I'm going to put it right up there with a championship than knocking off, say, LeBron.
Thanks, Roger. I mean, and look, even if the Warriors did make the playoffs, winning 36 or 37 games, I mean, I don't see they're not going to beat the Lakers or the Clippers. I mean, and I know people out there say, wait a minute, what if they get Steph and Clay back? Even if.
I think Roger's on to something. the point is that you can think, you know, logically and think, wow, they'd be better off acquiring future assets, and then next year, this year's the what's the term you use, the gap year. But as a fan, it's awfully hard to watch them win and not start thinking about, why can't they win more? Maybe they could make a run. And to Roger's point, talking about the players, he said the players play for the fans. Well, okay, in a way, but the players are playing for themselves too. And the players, there is nothing in the players' minds. You can see it every game now. There's nothing about them thinking, gee, you know, this year's really a gap year. And Draymond is leading the way in that regard, as he talked about after they beat the Pelicans, how great it felt to win. I think right now it's nice to think about that a little bit. I understand it seems a little ridiculous, but as a fan, it's hard during a winning streak to start thinking, huh, yeah, I guess they'd be better off if they just, you know, they end up with a top draft pick. It's logical, but it's hard to think about as a fan right now.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. John Dickinson, Whitey Gleason, Warriors this week here on 95.7 The Game. Would you want this team to get an 8 spot?
I do.
Would you want them to make a run?
I do.
Would you want them to make a run, get in as the 8 spot, as opposed to maybe...
Anything can happen when you get in the postseason, JD.
Garnering a top 5 pick.
Yeah, with a chance to topple LeBron or Kawhi.
Well, and look, I mean, I can see it both ways in an attempt that, like, I don't really believe in tanking. I don't believe in intentionally trying to lose. To me, you just let the season play out and you but I also just don't think they're good enough to put themselves in position to where they can actually make it.
Well, probably not, but like, it depends on how...
Can you be within 2 or 3 games when Steph comes back 2.5 months from now? Probably not, right? Because
probably
you're
not.
5.5 games back now, and if you just play... And Portland or whoever in the 8 spot's probably going to play a little bit better than the level that they've been playing.
Maybe.
And... Even if you play a little bit better than the level that you're playing, it's still, okay, you're going to go from 5.5 back to, it's still a net negative, right? You're going to be 7 or 8 back at that point, not 2 or 3 back.
It depends largely on how real what we're seeing is right now, this 4-game winning streak. Sometimes you catch teams at the right time, right? And they haven't played a lot of good teams. They did beat Houston. That was the win of the year. So are the Warriors really a much better team? I think they're better than they were, especially defensively, but are they approaching being a good team right now? And we'll have to see. If they are, then it's not as ridiculous to think about them making a run at 8, but even then it's still unlikely because the hole is so deep. I just think it would be fun to see them allow us to continue having that conversation for at least a couple more weeks.
All right, let's get to Mike in San Pablo. Mike, you're on 95.7 The Game. Hey, Mike.
Gentlemen, how are you? I hope you're having a great start to your weekend. I think any talk about the Warriors wanting to be in the playoffs is really silly. Where they've been in regards to the status of their organization, the titles, with their injuries, with the departure of Kevin Durant, they have a real opportunity to get a top three pick. And a top three pick for this team is invaluable in regards to, A, the quality of player that they could draft and hold their rights to for a few years, or what that draft pick could bring in regards to trading away salary, trading away unwanted players, or packaging that with trade exception or D'Lo for somebody amazing. I don't want them in the playoffs. That would be horrible.
And to what extent do you try to ensure that, Mike, I guess, is the next fold, next question of that. They really haven't had to address that yet, but, and they're still last in the Western Conference, but at what point do you say, okay, you got to do something to make sure you don't win too much?
All right, well, seeing as how my dream job has always been to be a GM of a basketball, here's what I would do. Smilajic, is that pronouncing his name correct? I would play Smilajic as much as he wants to play per game and keep him healthy. Let's see what he has. Let's see what all of these young players who we think could possibly have potential. And by young players, I don't mean Robinson III.
Right,
I don't mean these complimentary players that they have. I mean the young Kevin Looney, we know he's going to be here, but he's also a trade asset. But, like, these real young guys, what do they have? Can they play 35 minutes, and can they be a Harrison Barnes? Can they be a starter for or a 6-7 player for this team when Clay and Steph come back next year?
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call.
That's a very interesting call. Thanks, Mike. By the way, it's Smilajic,
yeah.
Like Screech. Smilajic.
Smilajic.
Yeah, and I think we're going to get a lot of opportunities to practice that in the games to come here. The thing is, if you look at the Warriors now, important it is to reload for next year. That first-round pick, it's only part of the package they could offer somebody, right? Because they do have, to GM Mike's point, they have a trade exception, which is a little convoluted, so we don't talk about it a lot because it's hard to understand, but it's still a very important thing to have.
Up to $16-17 million.
Yeah, you can't acquire salary that puts you over the cap, but you have an exception.
Well, and it would be the best example of it is, and we'll just use how they acquired it, right? It was Andre Iguodala. You essentially could take an Andre Iguodala type player, a player making $16, $17 million off of another team for nothing.
Yeah.
If another team wanted to get rid of a player X, now you can't literally do it with Iguodala because that's how you acquired it, but...
Yeah, it's like you can make a deal without having to adhere to the rules that dictate every other deal. It's an exception, right? So that it's only part of it. You also have D'Angelo Russell, whom you could trade. So yeah, it'd be really nice to have that first round pick, but that's only part of what the Warriors can use next year to reload. My point is, if they didn't get the first round pick, they would still have some assets. And you know how it is with a first round pick, it's still a crapshoot. And I'm also starting to come around to the thinking that there may not be a guy that you could get, even if you get the first pick, there may not be that guy that you think of, oh my goodness, that's the first pick. You got to grab that guy. He can change your franchise. We don't know that yet, but I think there's a lot of evidence suggesting that particular guy, and I think, was it GM Mike also made the point, somebody made the point, there's not a Zion out there. Yeah, there may not be this year.
Dylan in Berkeley, you're on 95.7 The Game. Hey, Dylan.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. We're doing well. What's on your mind?
Well, I think I'd like to say that what Mike said was pretty spot on, and I think they should possibly something they should do is start resting Draymond on back-to-back. Not only that, start resting GR3, Burks, and I'd like to bring those guys back next year, and the things I'd be looking to trade would be I'd look to move D'Lo and hopefully a top pick to maybe get a package of players who fit in with Steph and Clay better. Some players that come to mind I really like, Jonathan Isaac, possibly Aaron Gordon as well. I think they'd fit in really well. Or maybe even Kelly Oubre. I like how he plays. I'd put him on the Warriors, possibly with another player from the Suns. So I think they should start resting the complimentary players and let the rookies play. start losing games, get those picks, and then move it for an asset that fits with the team and complements Steph and Klay. And I like Willie Cauley-Stein. I think he'd fit in well with Steph and Klay. And I think drafting Wiseman would be a mistake when you have a center who can produce. He's been playing very well over this four-game winning streak.
Yeah, no, he definitely has. Thanks, Dylan. Appreciate the call. Yeah, I mean, Willie Cauley-Stein has been playing better.
He has.
And
he's changing the narrative, I think.
Yeah, I think he's starting to. And you know, I do think he is a player that falls in the category of, and look, he's pretty much been what I thought he would be to this point with the Warriors. He's going to look pretty good some of the time. He's going to not look like he's totally there other times. But I do think he's young enough to where you have to afford player development as an option for him, right? Like, he is still a player that can come to the Warriors and develop. He's young enough to do that. I think Glenn Robinson III, even though he's been in the league a while, he is young enough to still come to the Warriors and develop. And you're seeing, you know, both of those guys play better as the season gone on.
I know you're a big plus-minus guy, right? And Willie Cauley-Stein, his plus-minus numbers are excellent, suggesting that he's doing more to contribute than meets the eye sometimes. As far as player development goes, I think the Warriors, with all the emphasis on player development this year, and they hired extra player development coaches, I would have to think they consider themselves ahead of the game at this point. When you look at what they've gotten this year so far, not even half a year yet, out of Damian Lee and Kai Bowman, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they've got some young players that have really improved by leaps and bounds so far. I know there's a long ways to go, but
yeah,
they got to be real pleased with that.
Young players and young veterans. And you know what? D'Angelo Russell's another one. If you're going to keep D'Angelo Russell the entire year, and I like the fact that they've seemingly allowed D'Angelo Russell to play like D'Angelo Russell lately, which, by the way, I think has allowed them to win more games because they're just letting him be the guy that's going to shoot it more than everybody else consistently because he's their best offensive player, regardless of how pretty it is all of the time. So I think that's helped too. But he has been, I think, should be afforded the opportunity to grow and get better. And I think you're starting to see a little bit of that. 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Warriors this week, we roll on here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Whitey Gleason, and you on the phone lines, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. We're kicking around the topic of what the heck do the Warriors do, Whitey Gleason, because they've won four in a row. And
Keep winning.
You've pointed out are only, I'm reluctant to even point it out, honestly.
I know
only
you are.
Only 5.5 back of the 8th seed.
That's why I repeatedly am doing it, because you don't want to. And I respect your reluctance.
Only 5.5 back of the 8th seed with only the entire Western Conference in between you and that slot.
Yeah, but they were what? It wasn't that long ago. How many back were they?
I don't know. 7.5.
Yeah, see?
8.5.
Making progress.
I mean, it's...
And playing so well.
They are playing better. And defensively, they've been playing significantly better. And what kind of got us going on this topic was... I mean, it's funny. If you look at the Western Conference right now, the Warriors have the longest winning streak. They have the longest winning streak in the Western Conference. They have the second longest winning streak in the NBA, with only Boston winning more. And also, who is it? Miami's won four in a row as well. But the Lakers at the top of the conference, they've lost four in a row.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of...
Didn't they say they were determined not to lose three in a row all year after they lost two in a row?
Yeah, well, now that you've lost four in a row, it's just, you know what, you might as well not give a rip until April.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And how about the Kyle Kuzma stuff with LeBron James? And yeah, Kyle Kuzma's trainer, you know, just tweeting some cryptic stuff, kind of blasting LeBron James.
Yeah, I saw somebody on the text line here yesterday suggesting, hey, Kyle Kuzma, let's get him. Is he available now?
Yeah, he may be available. Again, I don't know what the Warriors, you know, what are you going to, would you get? I know we're just, I always like to at least entertain hypothetical trades, but I don't
know what he gives you that you don't already essentially have.
Oh, I would take Kyle Kuzma if I'm the Warriors. I just don't think there's anything that the Warriors really have that the Lakers would necessarily want. I mean, would the Lakers want Alec Burks or Glenn Robinson III for Kyle Kuzma? I mean, that's That's not going to happen, right? Let's keep it on the phone lines. We'll move on here. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. Pablo is next. You're on 95.7 The Game. Hey, Pablo.
Hey, what's up? So I had a thought on Willie Cauley-Stein. From the beginning, I was kind of a fan of, you know, the Warriors getting him and whatnot. The only thing I feel like he lacks a bit, and I feel like it would help him a lot, would be like him gaining maybe like 15 pounds of just pure muscle. And I want to ask you guys, you JD specifically, like since you're around Kerr a lot, how much does Kerr have a role in the individual development of for Willie Cauley-Stein? If they know like weight gain would be a great help to him, how much does like the coaching staff have an effect on what he is able to do as far as his diet, you know?
Yeah, thanks, Pablo. Appreciate the call. I mean, the Warriors have a full staff of people that weigh all of that and analyze it and talk to him about it and figure out the best, you know, position or their version of the best position that he can be in physically. So yeah, I mean, I think, you know, everybody's involved in that with every player, and I think, you know, there are examples. Whitey, Amari Spellman is an example, I think, of not only diet and trying to get him to trim down, which has been an issue for him at times in his life and in his NBA career, but also something like tweaking his shot, you know, to make it, you know, be more effective, to put a little more arc on it. You know, Eric Paschal's another player that, you know, tweaking his shot. So everybody's involved in all of it consistently.
Yeah, the thing about Willie Cauley-Stein, 7 feet, 240, that's what he's listed as. I don't know that his frame is such that he could put on a lot more weight and still be the same type of player. It's a great point because he does tend to get pushed around by bigger players, but also he runs the floor well, and he's very athletic when it comes to catching lobs. So it cuts both ways. Yeah, on the one hand, wow, if he's bigger, he'd have a little more presence inside. On the other hand, many of the things that he is able to do would be more difficult for him to do if he gained more weight. And he's a versatile defender. So I'm not sure you want him putting on a lot more weight.
Yeah, and, you know, the one thing, and I'm lukewarm, let's say, on acquiring Willie Cauley-Stein. He is pretty good at defending on the perimeter. And, you know, there were a couple of plays.
That's my point.
Yeah, there were a couple of plays last night. You know, he's almost at times, and look, I think he's improved on the interior, but at times he's been a better defender against guards on the perimeter than he has even in the paint.
Well, when he came into the league, that was supposed to be his real upside. Oh, this guy's can guard all five positions. And there were times when it seemed like, I'm not sure he can guard one, but now he's getting back to that. And by the way, I'm getting back to Kuzma here. I'm with you on Kuzma. I think he'd be a nice piece. Yeah. And last year I was down on him because last year he didn't shoot the ball well. But he's shooting the ball better again this year.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. John Dickinson, Whitey Gleason here, Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game. As we continue on here until 1 o'clock, the Warriors and the Mavs will come your way tonight here on 95.7 The Game. Warriors Live, Jim Barnett will join us out at Chase Center at 4 o'clock, and then the Warriors and the Mavs coming up at 5:30, the special weekend tip time for all Warriors home games. 5:30 tonight for the Warriors and the Mavericks. Yeah, if you could get your hands on a Kyle Kuzma, that would be great. I just don't see the Lakers.
I don't either.
Trading him unless you're getting a really good player back.
What about Smilagic? Are we going to see more of Alan Smilagic tonight? We might if Spellman's still not feeling well.
Yeah, Spellman
it would probably
was
be just a brief glimpse.
Ill before the game and opened up a shift, if you will, for Alan Smilagic to get in there. And the story goes that he was going to get, what, about 2 minutes? And Draymond suggested making it four, and it winds up being, you know, a 4 minute stretch where he looked pretty competent. You know, I think being able to make a basket cut and hit a layup, being able to get an offensive rebound and a putback, I mean, he showed off his skill set a little bit. I still don't think we're going to see a ton of him. And I think, you know, Steve Kerr, as much as he does like to play everybody, there really is, I think, a preferred pecking order. And I think as long as some of the more senior players have been around, are healthy and able, Amari Spellman, he would tend to go to that guy first.
Yeah. Steve Kerr, the way he looks at it has to be, look, Smiley Geach, I played you almost 5 minutes and you played well. You should be good for a while. That's you shouldn't be expecting much more than that. Obviously, if he gets another 2 to 4 minutes and he does anything similar to what he did last night, we're going to see more of him. But I think the big question about him is at the defensive end, which is pretty typical of a, you know, 19-year-old, and the Warriors have been playing so well defensively, you could understand Steve Kerr's reluctance to give him extended minutes, even though we're all clamoring to see more.
Yeah, and I think you look at it, and I mean, he looked a little lost out there, I thought.
Sure.
At times, a little bit, you know, we joked last night and earlier on the show, he looked like a guy that wanted to be guarding everybody, whether it was his man away from the ball, or if the ball would move, he would want to move to the guy who was guarding the ball.
He looked last night like a lot of people look when they first go to the Chase Center and they're trying to figure out how to get from one floor to the other. It's not hard to do, but it's a brand new arena, right? And
yeah.
We've all been there when you first get out there. Okay, what? How am I get? Okay, where do? Is this the elevator I take? That's how he looked a little bit last night at times. Like, wait, okay, who's doing what now?
Yeah, and at times offensively, he was looking to maybe set a screen on somebody that didn't want one or wasn't supposed to get one. You know, there was a time where I thought he overloaded a particular spot on the floor where they had three guys in close proximity, as opposed to, you know, maybe he should have been somewhere else spreading the floor. So I did think he looked a little confused out there, but when he got the ball in his hands, he looked very confident.
And I have a roster point here. Question for you regarding the roster. It's not a priority. I'm not suggesting this is something they need to get done. But again, if you buy into the narrative that next year they expect to be relevant again and competitive, I would think that they would want to add at some point a legitimate center, a big someone. I know the caller says Willie Cauley-Stein needs to bulk up. Well, they had Pachulia when they won championships. They had Bogut. At some point, they need a guy like that on the roster, right? Even if it's a guy that doesn't play much, but somebody who can match up with other big centers when they need to. Again, I'm not saying they need to get that done now, but just looking at the roster and so much of what we're doing this year is projecting, okay, what's the roster going to look like next year? They've got to have somebody who can fill that role next year.
They do, and I think to the bigger point on that, it's about, you know, that's why when you read, you know, the Monty Poole story about, you know, the Warriors willing to deal at the trade deadline, and he listed a number of different players, all the usual suspects the Warriors may be willing to deal. You know, you have to look at this almost under the guise of, you know, how I phrased it at the start of the offseason in July. It's almost like a 16-month offseason. And if you look at this year as a gap year, 16-month offseason, whatever, and you're trying to build yourself back to a championship-level contender, there's a bunch of different ways you can do it, but if you just look at the timeline, the trade deadline is, you know, that's an opportunity to improve yourself for the future, because that's when other teams are going to be wanting to make moves. And, you know, if you just look at it, that's a time to get better. You know, free agency is a time to get better. The draft is a time to get better. There's only so many different times of the year on the calendar that you really can look to get better. So I think the Warriors probably do have a short shopping list of, hey, if we can get player X or player Y, this guy might be a fit next year, and it's somebody that's completely off the radar right now.
Yeah, there's four ways you improve your team, right? Through trade, through free agency, through the draft, and through player development. And the Warriors are focused right now on player development. They're getting ready for the draft. We'll see about free agency. Right now, maybe making some deals as well.
And they have to be, you have to be, I think, open for business if you're the Warriors right now, right?
Yes, it just makes sense, although I'd love to know what they're thinking. The most fascinating aspect of this is what kind of quality player are they hoping to be able to attract in the offseason or acquire through trade, and do they have any specific people in mind, even though those people may not technically be available yet?
Yeah, I think it is a tricky. Who's the most likely Warrior to be gone by February the 6th?
It's got to be Burks.
Just because that's going to be the guy that's going to have the most interest in other teams?
Yeah, I
would
think
so. And the most likely you could get at least a second-round pick for him?
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's kind of a plug-and-play, right? Anybody can look at that. He's a veteran. He defends. He's handling this year. He can score. You know what you're getting with him, probably more than any of the other guys who would be available.
John Dickinson, Whitey Gleason, it's Warriors this week, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Whitey Gleason wants the Warriors to keep on winning and push for that eighth spot.
Don't you, in a way? I mean, wouldn't you like to see it?
Yeah, I look.
That's all I'm saying. It's fun.
You don't catch me using the T word.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't. And I, you know, look, I'm a bigger believer in you just let it play out. I just don't think that there's a realistic chance of the Warriors really getting into the conversation for the eight seed. I just don't think they can be good enough until Stephen Curry comes back to where you say, oh, okay, they've got a shot at this thing.
And I agree with you. It's a real long shot. It's a long putt at this point.
But
this winning streak's been fun, and it would be fun to see him get a little closer.
I'm also not the guy that's going to say, oh, well, you have to lose every single game, and that's the best course of action is to, you know, ensure that you are in that top three and have a 14% chance and the best odds of gaining the number one pick. I think the Warriors are set up to be good enough next year with who they have coming back to where whether they have the second pick or the eighth pick, I think they have a means to – you still got to either make a pick or put that player in a deal to get a damn good player back that's going to get you back to where you want to be. And I'm of the belief that the Warriors are competent enough of a franchise to not have it matter whether it's 2 or 8. So you know what? Play your ass off and go try to win as many games as you can right now.
Yeah. Do you really want to lose as many games as you can so that you'll get a 14% chance of drafting LaMelo Ball? Is that really worth it?
But I think we are talking about two different things. And what I mean by that is I'm fine with the Warriors winning some games, but in part, I'm fine with them winning some games because I don't think they're going to be good enough to make an eight spot regardless. But I also don't necessarily think they're going to be good enough to really screw up their draft positioning completely. It's not like they're going to be the 13th pick.
That would probably be the best of both worlds. And by the way, just to clarify, I enjoy the winning streak and looking at the standings and going, hey, you know, maybe they get closer. In no way am I suggesting they need to acquire assets at the deadline this year so they can make a run.
Well, you want Kyle Kuzma.
You said you wanted Kyle Kuzma. Kyle Kuzma would be a nice piece next year and beyond.
Yeah, Kyle Kuzma would be a nice piece.
But that's just because there are issues apparently in Lakerland. There's no reason to think that the Warriors have any shot at acquiring him.
Right. And I don't see the Warriors having an asset that the Lakers would command. And look, Kyle Kuzma is somebody that, you know, at some point could become a trade chip, but I just don't see those two teams helping each other, I guess, is probably the best way to look at it.
Do you really think other teams around the league, as it's been suggested, are looking at the Warriors warily like, oh, we got to keep an eye out for them because next year they'll be coming for us again?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, I think the league, what was the report a couple of weeks ago that was, oh, the league is terrified? I can't remember who had the report. Oh, the league is terrified because the Warriors are going to be maybe have a top three pick and they're going to package Russell or keep Russell or whatever. And Draymond and Clay and Steph are all going to be playing together again. And the league's terrified that they're going to use the assets they have to become elite. Heck yeah. Heck yeah, the league's terrified of that. I believe that 100%. 100%.
There were two reports. There was a more substantial report from Woj and or Zach Lowe or someone who had spoken to someone in the league. And then secondly, there was Matt Barnes' podcast where he and Wade and Steven Jackson and someone else, I think, were saying, yeah, boy, the rest of the league's going to be scared of these guys.
Yeah.
That was just more their opinion.
Well, and again, you know, you look at the Western Conference right now.
Do I have to?
I mean, if you don't have to, but if you do, who blows you away? Lakers and Clippers are pretty good. I think they're the best two teams in the conference. The Nuggets are what the Nuggets, I think we thought they would be, but I think if you watch them on a night-in, night-out basis, they've actually been not quite as good as you would want to see them be, given the year that they had last year. Something's a little bit off with them. Dallas is vastly improved. 20-10, and Luka Doncic looks like a premier franchise player that if he's on your team, you're going to win 45 games minimum every year. The Jazz are a clear-cut playoff team, but they are kind of like Denver, a little bit underwhelming compared to what you thought they could be.
All true, JD, but as you well know, it's not even New Year's yet.
The Rockets.
And evaluating how good an NBA team is before New Year's is kind of like evaluating who's going to win a game at the end of the first quarter.
The Rockets.
What about the Rockets?
They've still got it in them. I mean, what are the Rockets winning a championship?
Well, who knows what they're going to do? Probably not, but in a watered-down West, it's not inconceivable that they could get there, especially if they're able to land Iguodala or someone. I don't think they will. But the point is, we don't really know what any of these teams are going to look like come playoff time.
My point is, as I start to project toward next year, I see the Warriors as easily being able to get back into the top three. Lakers and Clippers, they're probably better teams. But beyond that, could the Warriors, with a few moves, be right there better than Denver, better than Houston, better than Dallas, better than Utah? Look, I know those teams are going to potentially make moves, too, to improve, and that can offset it some. But I look at right now, the Warriors aren't going to have to go as far to get back to the top or near the top than I think you would have believed they would have had to have gone 2 months ago.
And you're assuming, I'm not disagreeing with you, but you're assuming that's because Draymond will be fresher, presumably Curry will be, Clay will be, and they're going to add assets.
Yeah. Yeah.
Either a draft pick or a big name.
I mean, we penciled this out when I was in with Steiny this week, and I know we've done this on the show before. I mean, if you look at, you know, Curry, Clay, Draymond, having those guys and having it, you know, a new center, that, you know, or Willie Cauley-Stein, or Willie Cauley-Stein and another center, finding a starting three, and you push Glenn Robinson III into a more of a backup role, or even, you know, into a different tier on this Warriors roster, there's still a means to get a player via the draft, a player via a D'Angelo Russell trade, or two, a mid-level exception, a trade exception. I mean, the Warriors could have the big three, a handful of the younger players and veteran players that have performed well for them this season, and still have four or five better players on the roster than those guys, better players than those guys that aren't there currently.
Well, I think they're going to be much better next year, and they're going to be contending for a high playoff seeding again. I don't know how scared teams are going to be of them or how scared teams are right now. Maybe wary, because no matter what happens, they're not going to have Kevin Durant next year, and no matter what they do, it's really tough to replace a guy like that. We were talking about all decade, clearly all decade. He was great when he was here. Finals MVP twice, as everyone knows. So if you're going to assume the Warriors are going to be anywhere near as good as they were when they won multiple championships, I don't know about that, because that's going to be awfully tough unless you can tell me they're going to bring in somebody nearly as good as Kevin Durant.
But they're going to be deeper, and I think you can offset that by being deeper. I think they're going to be significantly deeper than they've been.
Like they were in 15 and 16?
And I actually think they could be even better than that in terms of depth. I think the Warriors could be even better than that in terms of you're going to have to, you may not have a Durant, but you, the Spates and the Barbosas and the guys like that are going to be better.
Who are they going to be? And those guys were really good, as you know.
No, those guys were really good, but I mean, that's where you're going to have to piece it together. I mean,
Iguodala-Livingston? You're going to have an Iguodala and a Livingston?
I think you are. Yeah, I think you are. I think you're going to have a lot of depth and better depth than you had even previously, and that's going to be the reason why you offset it. Now, you still need a replacement level capable starting small forward. I mean, that's where you get into the conversation. I said this to Steiny the other day, and you know, a lot of Warriors fans down on a guy like Harrison Barnes, right? You know, down on the way his tenure ended with the Warriors, and then you get Kevin Durant, and it's like, well, my God, Kevin Durant's a lot better than Harrison Barnes. Of course, he's one of the best players of all time. But the thing that I said to Steiny is, you know, there's a significant difference between Harrison Barnes and Glenn Robinson III. Like, Harrison Barnes is a lot better than Glenn Robinson III. And Glenn Robinson III's been nice. But
It's also a lot more expensive.
You need that gap to be filled. And that, my point is, like, don't just think you're plugging in Glenn Robinson III as you're starting small forward with the other three players. Like, you need a level better than that. And that's kind of what I mean about you can still have the guys that are helping you now, and you could still have the big three, and you can still not have Durant. But there's still a whole middle tier of players that you're going to need to pluck three or four guys from.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Harrison Barnes is kind of the perfect example of that type of player.
I think they have a chance to be nearly as good as they have been next year, but I think that all hinges on who they're able to get and what decisions they're able to make in the draft and in terms of what players they acquire and what trades they want to make. And we just don't know yet how those things are going to work out, as we've seen this year with teams like the Knicks and the Pelicans, who I know organizationally are nowhere near what the Warriors have been. The plans don't always work out.
No, plans definitely do not always work out. John Dickinson, Whitey Gleason, Warriors this week here on 95.7 The Game. 3 hours in the books. Gary St. Jean is going to join us coming up at 12:30. More of your phone calls straight ahead, as we will also have the Warriors and the Mavs coming your way later this afternoon. Right here on your home of the Warriors, it's 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
Final hour of the program, John Dickinson, Whitey Gleason, and you on the phone lines at 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. We're trying to figure out what the heck the Warriors should do moving forward. Winners of four in a row, they're trying to sweep a five-game homestand at Chase Center tonight with the Dallas Mavericks in town. We'll have Warriors Live for you coming up at 4 o'clock with tip-off just after 5:30, Jim Barnett's going to join us, Whitey, at Chase Center. Looking forward to that, as always. And then Tim Roy and Tom Tolbert on the call coming up right here on 95.7 The Game at 5:30.
Yes, and 888-957-9570 is also the number to call if you want to agree with me and disagree with JD that LeBron James is the player of the decade on Twitter. Michael Duca says, Steph, period. Nobody has changed the game like him since George Mikan. On the other hand, we have Stephen Bell on Twitter. No question about it, as hard as it is to admit, LeBron James, KD, Steph right behind him. But it's a no-brainer if you're honest, says Stephen Bell. And if you want to figure out all-decade teams or figure out who belongs on there, I think it's an interesting question. Does Draymond Green belong on first, second, or third team all-decade? I don't think so,
unless you
feel obligated to have power forwards and centers on your team.
Yeah, unless you have to go truly positional, although there would be some, Whitey, that would say, you know what? Draymond Green might be the best center of the entire decade.
No. Really?
Yeah.
I mean, some would say that, but do you think that's true?
In terms of the time that he was on the court and plus minus when he played that position, and some of that has to do with who he was playing with, obviously, at times, maybe three or four other Hall of Famers, depending upon how you view Andre Iguodala. But Draymond at center, I think you would get some conversation regarding.
I think if you're going all decade and you go first, second, third team, I think Steph's on there clearly. Durant, but I don't even know if Clay makes an all decade.
I think he does. I think he'd be in the top.
Because there's some really good players that you got to consider.
He's on my second team all decade.
Second team, really?
Yeah, and but again, I have the OG.
But you don't
list.
Have Wade and
now they're on their own.
Guys.
They're on their own like separate list. Let's get to Joe and San Bruno. Joe, you're up next here on 95.7 The Game. We appreciate the phone call. How are you, Joe?
Center for the decade, not a bad point. A couple things. It's pretty evident that we went to the Warriors, New Orleans Pelicans game, and D'Angelo and Curry, I just can't see them surviving together. Now, if the Warriors really want to get under the hard salary cap, they need to shed $6 million. That'll give them a lot of flexibility going forward. They need a small forward to get to the next level. I agree with you guys there. And I have a proposal to make. What do you think about Andrew Wiggins, D'Angelo Russell? They make almost the identical salary. They're almost within like $270,000 of each other. And you got to be realistic. They're not going to get Kyle Kuzma at his salary. It's way too low of a base. If they can shed some guys like Looney, Poole, and Evans and get Kai Bowman and Damian Lee on the roster, Minnesota has got enough money to absorb that salary differential. What do you think of Andrew Wiggins, and what do you think of Minnesota feeling about Andrew Wiggins?
Yeah, Joe, I like Andrew Wiggins as a potential option there. I he's one of those guys, I've always kind of put it this way, Whitey, you know, I wonder what the Warriors think of Andrew Wiggins. Like, do they believe he is somebody that if they got him in, you know, to their system, their development, you know, could they turn him into something that maybe he hasn't been in his career to this point?
I know that he did not impress them. He didn't impress anybody when he was just here against the Warriors.
Yeah.
Bad game, and he followed that up with a bad game in Sacramento.
That's one that I just kind of wonder. I would lean toward no, he's not, but he's also still very young. I mean, every time I look at Andrew Wiggins, I mean, he's not 25, I don't believe, until February. Like, he's still 24. And so, I know, you know, he's been in the league, and he's been paid now a large amount of money. So it's like, what's the incentive? Yeah, February 23rd, 1995. So he isn't 25 until, you know, 2 months from now.
I know 538.com, and I don't know what their methodology was, but in 2017, they named Andrew Wiggins the NBA's worst defender. So obviously, you'd have some of the same issues if he's that bad of a defender. You'd have some of the same issues with him here as you have with D'Angelo Russell. He's not a good defender either. I don't know. I don't see Minnesota giving up on him, trading out a young player like Wiggins to bring in a young player who plays a different position. I think it's more likely Minnesota would want to acquire Russell and team him with Wiggins as they were interested in doing over the summer. But as far as the idea of bringing Wiggins here, I like Wiggins. I don't know if he's a great fit either.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it would also be contingent on, do you view Wiggins as a 3-4 or do you view Wiggins as a 2-3? I mean, it seems like the Timberwolves are always trying to figure out who to use him with and how to use him positionally. And it always seems like they want him more as a guard than even a forward. And to me, he's almost got to be a forward. If you're telling me he's a guard, then I don't want him at all.
I think the Timberwolves may have made that mistake that you see other teams make. And we could actually go down the standings and say, yeah, they made the mistake. That is, sometimes teams get really good picks, and we know that they had the number one pick back-to-back years, right? Because they got Wiggins from Cleveland.
Right.
And so you get Wiggins, you get Karl Anthony Towns. This is it. We're set. These are going to be great players. And it turns out, especially Wiggins, he's a flawed player. And he's not a bad player by any stretch, but he's a flawed player. But they need him to be a great player to get anywhere. And now they're coming to the realization perhaps that, all right, he's a pretty good player, but he's not as good as we need him to be for us to actually accomplish anything. And Karl Anthony Towns as well. I mean, he may lack some of the things that you need him to be a cornerstone player. And that's part of the problem with Jimmy Butler being there. Jimmy Butler thought these guys were soft, right?
Yeah. And, you know, you wind up seeing them able to make the playoffs when they have Jimmy Butler in the fold and it all kind of fits. But Jimmy Butler wanted no part of those guys.
So I think Minnesota faces some really tough questions. Do we double down? Do we need to get Wiggins and Kat more help? Or is it time for us to go in another direction entirely?
And the funny thing about that is I think you could almost, and I wouldn't be willing to do it yet,